Hiring isn't just about finding someone willing to take the job. You need the right person with the right background who can move your business forward. If you want candidates who truly match what you're looking for, trust Indeed Sponsored Jobs. With Indeed Sponsored Jobs, your post stands out to quality candidates who actually fit the role. According to Indeed data, 90% are more likely to be hired and trusted by 1.6 million companies. Spend more time interviewing candidates who check all your boxes. Less stress, less time, more results. Now with Indeed Sponsored Jobs. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to help your job get the premium status it deserves at Indeed.com/podcast13. Just go to Indeed.com/podcast13 right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/podcast13. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Do it the right way with Indeed.
DC politicians want to enact harmful credit card mandates that could take away your cash back and rewards points, perks that stretch your budget and make life a little easier. Losing these benefits means less money for your family's everyday essentials like gas and groceries. The perks you rely on could disappear, leaving you with higher costs and fewer options. Tell Congress to guard your card and oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card mandates.
Paid for by Electronic Payments Coalition.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to Solo Spotlight. I'm your host, Ryan McDougall, and today's guest is John Morgan. John has spent 18 years inside Edmonton Transit Service, from bus to dispatch to LRT control, plus community league builder and street-level volunteer. In this municipal election, he is running in Ward EP Kokanibuitsi. Sorry if I mispronounced that. It is a hard one to pronounce. In the episode, he will pronounce it properly. We sit down and talk about what's going on in the South End, what's the challenges that he's seeing from his residents of his ward through door knocking and community league events. And we break down his platform of what he plans to champion if he gets elected in office. Before we start with this episode, don't forget to subscribe, like, and follow for more conversations like this. Your support helps keep this channel as well as Solo Spotlight alive and running. As well, after the episode, drop a comment. Let us know what was the highlight of this conversation. Or if you're living in the South End, what are some things that you would like to see change in this ward? Without further ado, here's my guest, John Morgan. All right. Welcome, everybody. Solo Spotlight, another episode, another day. I'm here with John Morgan. He is running for city council. You're going to have to pronounce the ward because I cannot pronounce the ward.
Yeah, thanks, Ryan. I am running in Ward Ipi Kokanipiutsi. So,
Ipi-Kokanipiutsi.
You almost got it. There. Just that Piutsi at Piutsi. The end.
There we go.
So Ipi, like, I don't know, Ipi, and then Kokani, like the beer.
Yeah.
And then Piutsi. Ipi Kokanipiutsi.
Very nice. Yeah. You come from a background of a lot of, you know, community serving jobs and roles. I'm really happy to have you on here and talk about your platform, what your plan is, how your campaigning's going, and kind of a lot of what have been your takeaways. But to get started, I'd like to ask you to let the audience know, for anybody that hasn't met you before or hasn't seen your campaign, how would you describe yourself?
How would I describe myself? Well, so I'll give you a little background, I guess, sure. On who yeah. I am. So I've been a city employee for the last 18 years with Edmonton Transit. I started off as a bus driver, much like many in the transit industry, and kind of worked my way through the system. So I've been a dispatcher. I've been an inspector. I currently sit in the control center for the LRT.
Okay.
And work as an LRT control superintendent. So I get to play with the biggest train set in the city all day long and move people. So what could be better than that? So I live in the south side where I'm running in Ward Ipi Kokanipiutsi, in the community of Rutherford. I was the community league president there for Heritage Point, serving the communities of Rutherford and McEwen. I did that for about 5 years, just stepping down in January here to run for city council. And I was also on the board of the Edmonton Federation of Community Leagues as well, and representing all of the leagues in Ward, Epcot, and Epiutsi, right from and beyond, actually, all the way up to Royal Gardens, kind of by White Mud, and then all the way down to the brand new Community League Allard in that section of town. So, and actually, funny enough, before moving to the south side, I lived on the north side. I was president of Montrose Community League as well. So I've been pretty involved in community leagues for a long time, serving my community, building infrastructure. We built a playground up on the north side. Right now, we are in the final stages of building an ice rink in Rutherford, actually. So, but, you know, putting on events, advocating for our neighbors, connecting our neighbors with representatives from city council and our MLA and our MP, and making sure that the voices of our community are heard. So I've been doing that for a while. I've been coaching soccer in that area. I was on the board of my kids' school council there too, Johnny Bright, again, stepping down just this past fall, actually. What else can I say? I've been just, again, serving wherever I can, while also doing some street outreach as well with local groups. And what I like about doing some of that stuff, you know, outside of my professional career, is being able to, what I really like about like community leagues and the street outreach work that I was doing with Group Water Warriors, it's just that like just the ground level, just very like what can you do, right? Mm-hmm. So like I'm not a project manager, so building a rink is not my forte. You know, I'm not a social worker. You know, being out there on the streets and doing outreach is not something I've been particularly trained for. But what can I do, right? And so I can lead. I can build connections. I can humanize people on the streets. I can give a sandwich. If I can't, you know, house somebody or
find someone that can.
You know, yeah, exactly. But if I can't find the big solutions, at least I can make those connections. And that's really important to me.
Yeah, that's interesting. Now, when you talk about a community league, that sounds like it's almost like the next rung in the if you look at rungs in the ladder, it's like community engagement and being like part of that like community league. That's kind of the next closest connection to like a city councilor, or where there'd be like a lot of separation there.
So I kind of look at community leagues as the most pure form of democracy. Like anybody can get on there. I actually ran for city council in 2021 against our current councilor in Ward, Epcot, and Epiutsi. Obviously, I lost, but what I said to myself and anybody that would listen was that there are lots of ways to serve your community. I don't need to be an MLA or an MP or a city councilor or mayor, any of those things, right? I can still do things in my community to serve people. So as I said, I went back. You know, I was president before at Heritage Point as before 2021's election. I just went back to doing it, right? And so, and this again, just serving the communities. And community leagues are very unique to Edmonton. I don't know how much you know about community leagues, but they are.
If you could give us just a little bit of deep dive.
Yeah.
Because I'm from all the people that I've talked to, you don't hear community leagues a lot. And I think that's pretty interesting, because it's somewhere where someone could get started if they're looking to engage with their community, they're looking to do anything in that nature and jump into some public serving role, which kind of has a small barrier to entry, as you kind of alluded to.
Absolutely. Well, it teaches you governance. I'll go into what a community league is, but it teaches you governance, gets you advocating for yourself, for your neighbors, really gives some strength to a community, to a neighborhood, to a group of people that otherwise may not feel as heard as they would like. So community leagues have been around for over 100 years in Edmonton. And again, they're pretty unique. The established order of community leagues have been pretty unique to Edmonton. And there's community groups and stuff in other cities and such, but the way we organize it is pretty unique and pretty special to Edmonton. So anybody can join. They are within a defined boundary within a community, an area. My community league represents about 5,000 to 7,000 people, okay, between Rutherford and McEwen. Don't quote me on those numbers.
And it's like, and to give comparison or perspective, that's in a ward that has what, just under 100,000.
I would say about that. Yeah. Right.
Okay. So then it's like little bit of like pockets of community leagues.
Yeah. So almost every neighborhood. There's a couple areas because we are on the outskirts of Edmonton. There are a couple of areas in my ward that don't have representation with community leagues yet. At least aren't able to say they're part of a community league. The residents can still be associate members, but anyway, I'm getting a little bit in the weeds here. But yeah, I mean, the community leagues are empowered to build infrastructure in their neighborhoods after the fact, and we build infrastructure based on what the community wants. So years ago, speaking of that ice rink that we're building now, years ago we did the community league before my time actually did a needs assessment and outreach to the community and said, these are some of the options that we can build. We can build a hall or an ice rink or a skate park or spray park, something like that, right? And so in the community overwhelmingly asked for an ice rink in that area. So then we started fundraising and being a part of a league and organized in that way gives us that power to be able to work with the city, work with other external partners and fundraise and kind of work through the process of building infrastructure that is needed, right? And so there's a lot of value to that. I mean, we're all volunteers. As I said, I'm not particularly my forte. I'm an operations guy with the city. I'm not a project manager. I'm not right in construction, any of that stuff, right? But the value is in the people that are dedicated to the work there and giving their time for their neighbors.
So how does that differentiate from like, or not even dish, where's like the connection between that and like an HOA?
So an HOA is a, once you're in it, it's an asset, like it's a, you have to pay for it. You have to be
right
in it. It's established by the builders typically. Right. And then they have set things that they're responsible
because they also want to build. They could also be, you know.
Well, they have. So in my area, I'm part of an HOA too. I'm a member of the West Rutherford HOA.
Right.
And so they have very specific things that they can put their money into based on their mandate, right? Mm-hmm. And so they're in charge of the fences in my community, and this differs from HOA to HOA, mm-hmm, but they're in charge of the fences. They're in charge of the fountains and the storm ponds and lighting actually at the entrances. And that's pretty much it. They do have a responsibility to serve. And, you know, they've actually contributed to the ice rink build as well. So mm-hmm, that was really nice and generous of them. But they are kind of set in with what they're allowed to do. And again, that differs from each HOA.
Right.
So, The beauty of a community league is that it's by choice.
Right.
And so you actually like, you choose to be part of it. You choose to give your time to it.
You're not forced.
And honestly, you kind of, you give what you can and you also can, and kind of do what you can for, right? So people, lots of different interests come into that league and have different things. Myself, again, I've done some outreach work on the streets. Back in 2021 during COVID, I was pretty concerned about water access, right? And so I was able to rally the community league, apart from all the other stuff that we're responsible for, to get do some water donations as well and kind of do some of that stuff, some harm reduction as well, some harm reduction training, stuff like that, right? And different people bring different perspectives, different ideas, things where they want to take the league. Again, with kind of the idea that we're still serving the community.
Have you seen any fluctuations in terms of membership or kind of has it gone up? Has it gone down in terms of engagement level, age groups, demographics?
So a big thing for community leagues, at least in my area anyways, is soccer. Mm. And my oldest...
World's most popular sport.
Well, it's the king of sports, right?
Yeah.
And so my oldest actually still plays club soccer, and you know, part of the registration process is buying a community league membership and working with the community leagues. Community leagues actually run the registration for all the community soccer typically, and so as communities age, we're still at a fairly young age in Rutherford, McEwen area and Heritage Point and much of the south of the Henday, but as communities age, you'll see some of that fluctuation, I think, because of the, you know, people see themselves, if they don't see themselves in the community league, they don't necessarily participate, right? And so part of what I was doing with community leagues, actually, with my time in Heritage Point, was finding where we were not serving. A big thing was seniors. And so it's fairly young community, but there were seniors still in the neighborhood, right? And, but we're also fairly young board. And so just kind of realizing what we do, what don't we know? Like, what don't we know? And what's the missing components?
Right. We might be getting too young.
Yeah.
Worried about and not kind of considering other factors in that population.
Absolutely. And seniors should be a part of the equation too, right? And so, but if they don't see themselves in the program that we do, you don't see the membership joining either. And then people go elsewhere for stuff. So
that's interesting, because it really kind of bridges the gap in terms of starting to have that foundational knowledge, or even having those soft skills to communicate with people and find out what people need, and being able to triage that. Because what I ask everybody coming on as a candidate is, you know, what is, you're faced with two right answers. What's the process in choosing which one is going to get chosen over the other? Right. And it's really interesting, because the more you refine these processes, the better ideas are going to come forward.
Hiring isn't just about finding someone willing to take the job. You need the right person with the right background who can move your business forward. If you want candidates who truly match what you're looking for, trust Indeed Sponsored Jobs. With Indeed Sponsored Jobs, your post stands out to quality candidates who actually fit the role. According to Indeed data, 90% are more likely to be hired and trusted by 1.6 million companies. Spend more time interviewing candidates who check all your boxes. Less stress, less time, more results. Now with Indeed Sponsored Jobs. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to help your job get the premium status it deserves at Indeed.com/podcast13. Just go to Indeed.com/podcast13 right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/podcast13. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Do it the right way with Indeed.
And then it's going to be up to like a collective group of people to decide. And it's like, well, at this point, regardless, you're going to piss someone off. So it's like, how do you bridge that gap? And it's all about the communication, right? Being able to give context and explain and take it, be like graceful about it. But I want to get into your campaign that you ran in 2021, because it says a lot about your resilience to not only not be successful and then come back and try again, because I think given the amount of time and effort and, you know, and then it doesn't work out in your favor, which is fine. You go and you go back to the community league, you go back, you know, so that's a lot of resilience, and it speaks a lot to your willingness to want to help the community. Talk about the changes that you've seen in yourself from the campaign you ran in 2021 to the campaign you're currently running.
Well, I definitely learned a lot in 2021. I think I came into it with different ideas of how that would go, both during and obviously, honestly, afterwards too, obviously, right? But, you don't need you don't need to be any of these high titled people to serve. You can serve your community in many different ways, right? And so again, I had started serving my community for a couple of years prior to that election, in kind of bigger ways, and so going back to that, people kind of just kept seeing the work we did and kind of the connections we made within the community. And I think people responded positively that this time around, and are responding positively to it right now. So truthfully too, I mean, I didn't know if I wasn't 100% sure, after losing that I would run again. But I was definitely watching, and so the success of our council, and honestly, the success of our councillor is a success for the community. And so, I think I don't need to disparage the work that our incumbent has done, but I will say that there's piece is missing there for
yeah,
sure.
Yeah, there's definitely some work to be done.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. So and so I watched and you know, I tried to create connections and do what I could. I had to work with our incumbent as a community league president and as she our counselor to try to, like I said, make connections there and advocate still. And I think some of the concerns that I had in 2021 are still there. Some frontline concerns with the city. Some of the specifics are missing in the decision making process, and again, just making sure that that community grounded voice is there.
Are you seeing the same feedback from door knocking now as you did in 2021? Is it kind of stayed consistent, or has there been new challenges that residents are facing?
Oh, well, there's definitely new challenges that people are facing, right?
Yeah.
So, I mean, that was a COVID year too.
Right.
It was very hard to create connections with community.
Yeah, people were probably pretty skittish in terms of wanting to have that, like, one-on-one connection or be, like, you know, in the same room as people.
The greatest thing you can do as a candidate is door knock and be in front of people,
that's
right?
Exactly
and creating those connections,
yeah.
Right? And so, like, you know, going to events is important too. And, like, if you can go to events and make connections there, that's a really big part of it as well. But, like, that individual connection, you can hear people talk, they can talk to you, they can ask questions, they can just make sure that their voices are heard. Nothing beats it as a candidate, nothing beats it.
Yeah.
But I mean, honestly, like just on a personal level, it's something I've been looking forward to for 4 years.
Right.
So
is now when you look at door knocking, it's interesting because again, it ties back into that resilience where how many people do you knock on their door, no answer. Or the person's like, yeah, I'm not voting, go away. Do you find that that's something that you kind of have to stay level in? Like, oh, people are busy and like this and that. And it's not me. It's the fact that like there's a lot of other like things shrouded in politics that I'm kind of just trying to get out here and get my voice heard. But they're like, on a ratio, say every 10 doors you knock on, how many people are answering?
So I guess there's a couple of things there, right? And so people do have assumptions. They do. They ask me all the time. I mean, my banner, my colors are blue. And so they make certain assumptions about my
conservative,
about my political leanings,
right,
as well, right? And
yeah.
So and so they kind of come to the door with bias at mm-hmm. times. Some people don't, but some people do, right? And so I've heard that. And so, but once you kind of make that connection, you can make people understand that you're just a person there. You're just serving, right? And I've been an independent candidate in 2021. I continue to be an independent candidate now. Part of that reasoning is, I don't really like political parties.
Yeah.
I think we're a little more deeper than that, a little more complex than that, than just a color. Just a political party, right? And honestly, what I want to do is serve the people, not a party.
Mm-hmm.
I do worry about money in politics too. Being another one is those parties can raise twice as much money as our independent candidates can make.
Mm-hmm.
And again, I want to make sure that my priorities are straight when I get into office. So where was I going with that now? So, but...
did anybody ever reach
out
from those political parties? Did anybody ever like reach out and try to like absorb you and be like, yo, run for us?
I'm not going to comment on that.
Fair enough. Fair enough.
But I will say that I've held that line.
Yeah.
As an independent.
Fair.
I want to work with whoever is at the table. I really
mm-hmm.
do. And like, I know the six. I think I know most of the mayoral candidates right now.
Mm-hmm.
I've sat around the table with the candidate Cartmel with community leagues. I've known Andrew. Councilor Knack for a long time. I actually went to high school with his cousins.
Okay.
Michael Walters is somebody I've met in the last election, because I was running the ward that he previously represented.
Right.
Raheem, Omar,
yeah.
All these guys I've met, I've known, I've gone for coffee, and I gotta make sure that I can work with them. I will
of
treat
course.
Them differently depending on who's there, but
yeah.
I gotta make sure that I can have a good work relationship,
yeah.
And that's part of this independence. This thing that I've been building with this independent
of course
candidacy, right?
So
I don't think I answered your question.
No, back to like the door knocking.
Yes, the door knocking. So yeah, I mean, I've been kicked off a few doors, I will tell you. mostly in regards to my my opinion that Canada should stay or should stay whole. Alberta should stay in Canada, and there's definitely a an anti.
Do people ask, are you a separatist? I've had about
three doors that have asked me that and asked me if I'm a separatist. And I will tell you that I'm not a separatist. I was born in Toronto. I have family in Ontario, southern Ontario. I got family in BC. I'm a Canadian.
Yeah. People are so weird. Some people are so.
But there is some frustrations, and I get that too. It's kind of trying to find where those frustrations are, where those pinch points are, and trying to find the common ground. And again, that's why I've been acting as an independent, so that people can't just assume one thing, that, you know, you're NDP or you're conservative or
so
whatever.
So we all know
else,
what
right?
you're
like,
about.
Yeah, I mean, you can know what I'm about without knowing or without kind of attributing me to a color.
Right.
To a party, right?
Yeah.
Like I'm more complex than that. I'm willing to listen. I'm willing to engage with people. And I want to hold on to that as much as I can. So I don't know where that's going to go, but I'm very hopeful that this is a one and done thing with political parties. So
why do you think there is such a disconnect in terms of, I want to say two things. There's a disconnect in two ways. One, education in municipal elections, and two, like involvement. Why do you think there's a disconnect there and people like you don't see like huge amounts of voter turnout, nobody really cares, nobody wants to vote, and then when they do, they don't necessarily know what like the job is or know what actually like they're voting on? Because even when I talk to like my friends and coworkers and I ask them like, are you going to be voting in these upcoming elections, and they ask me, oh, like conservative, liberal, and you're like, no, like, and it's just interesting because it's not that it's like a knock on them, but where does that start? Like, is that from the beginning? Did we lose it somewhere? And you've been in Edmonton for a long time. Like, has that fallen off, or has that been consistent where you just never see good voter turnout?
Yeah, well, I mean, people... So two things that I hear at the doors a lot, especially in south of the Henday, is we need a hospital and we need more schools. Both of those things are provincial responsibilities. Mm-hmm. I think there's the ability for the city to make the conditions favorable for those builds, for those infrastructure projects. But at the end of the day, that requires provincial funding and
right.
at least federal funding too.
Right.
And so what I tell people is that you advocate... You do what you can, right? You do, as a city official, you do what's in your mandate, what's in your purview, and then outside of that, you advocate and provide
the best case possible.
Yeah, and as I said, I have good relationships with our MLAs in the area. I mean, there's two MLAs that represent the ward, the area of the ward that I'm seeking to represent. There is, I think, there's two MPs. That represent that same thing too, and I'm happy to work with them as well. I haven't met one of them, but I met the other one, and so I'm happy to work with all levels of government. And again, that's maintaining that independence.
And
right?
it is so, MP that would be provincial.
No, MP is the member of parliament,
right?
So MLAs are your member of legislative assembly, and that's a provincial representative. So
yeah, I'm just trying to see how like the hierarchy works. So you have like city councilors, mayor, then it's MLA, and then it's MP?
Well, those are the different levels, right?
Right, I mean, that's,
everybody,
yeah. Everybody has different jobs
and ideally,
goals.
Everybody's working together, right?
Right.
There's no, like, the mayor's not answering to the MLA or
no.
something, right? It's just
different levels.
You have different levels, and you have different levels of responsibility, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so it's important to have good relationships with those folks. I mean, it's important to stand your ground, too, and when there's creep, you definitely... should be saying something and working, advocating for yourself, advocating for your city or your province or your country, but also, looking for ways to collaborate.
Mm-hmm.
And so when citizens in South Edmonton need a hospital and don't have one, when citizens have to drive 45 minutes to an hour to get to a school, which is a lot of our kids at Desrochers. I don't know if you know the neighborhoods of Desrochers.
I used to live in Braden Hill.
Oh, okay. So. Right on. Yeah, so you do know this. So kids in McEwen right now, they go to school over in Roberta McAdams, K to six right now, right? Mm-hmm. After that, they have to go all the way up to Duggan.
Right.
And so D.S. McKenzie is where they're going for a junior high.
Right.
Kids in Paisley, Graydon Hill, Des Rochers, they're all busing it up to Steinhauer and
right.
And Duggan and beyond to go to school too, which is, I mean, when we're talking about walkable cities, and this is where the kind of the lines are blending here a little bit, but we're talking about walkable cities with complete access to all services, like businesses, hospitals, doctors, and schools. It doesn't jive, right?
Yeah.
And so
in Graydon Hill, you could see that there was a big separate, like, to get anywhere, it wasn't like a trek, but it was a little bit more. Like, I can just walk to Walmart from here. It's
absolutely
not a, right. But it, when I was in Graydon Hill, it's like, if I didn't have a vehicle, I would be pretty hard pressed to like get anywhere.
Absolutely.
Right.
I mean, and walkable cities include transit too, right?
Yeah.
Transit options. I mean, my career has been in transit. I'll tell you that the Southwest is chronically underserved with transit, and on-demand service is not sufficient, in my opinion,
mm-hmm.
for the demand that's there. And I'm hearing that at the doors too. People are saying, we need transit. My kid needs to get to school, to university, mm-hmm. to work, wherever they're going. And even people that are working would prefer to take that as an option, or have to take that as an option.
And how does that, like, when you look at growing transit, like, what's the process in doing that? Because I feel like to do that, it's easier said than done, or the ways of actually constructing those routes or getting those services, is that a big challenge, or is that something where we just don't have like the funding allocated or like the amount of like advocacy towards?
I think there's multiple issues there. So we need to make sure that our LRT lines and our rapid transit lines are, I mean, we don't have a lot of bus rapid transit in the city, but we have a little bit, but also our LRT lines are to the corners of the city, so that those are the main lines and we're feeding into them.
Right.
I'm pretty against privatization.
Yeah.
And I'll tell you, I'm the only progressive candidate, consider myself progressive candidate that is fully against privatization of our system.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm pretty against the idea of on demand. I believe trains or buses should be on a route scheduled and delivered by
the public,
servants.
Public service
working for the city of Edmonton.
Yeah.
Right. And so something I found out last year was that the on demand service is not even collecting fares. So we're not collecting money on that. They're taking people to the buses where their fares are collected there, but we're not collecting money at that
right.
level, right? And so we're not generating revenue from that, and it's more of a taxi service, and
right.
I struggle to find the reliability in that. So
100%. And then going private, it's like that probably would increase the cost for the passengers, lower the pays for the employees.
Well, I mean, if you're a private business,
cutting costs.
Like, you're cutting costs, right? And that's fine for certain sectors, for the public sector. The, you know, transit's not a moneymaker, but indirectly, it definitely contributes to the
economy. Yeah, when people can't
right?
get to so work. And
people need to get to work. People need to get out of the situations that they're in, right? They're trying to raise their profile, you know, with education and, mm-hmm. and all the rest, right? So it's definitely a giant part of our economy.
Yeah.
But indirectly, right? And so directly it's not, right? But
so then seeing so, that on paper, people just go,
no, yeah, absolutely, right?
Right?
And so, but it's an essential part of
right.
city operations.
Everybody's
right? And so,
missing their bus, buses ain't coming, they're losing their jobs because they're late for work or can't get to class or
no,
whatever
absolutely.
It is. And there's it, and that, yeah, it's
well, and there's a maintenance part there too, right? And
yeah.
so, I mean, our infrastructure, or well, just our equipment is aging too, and we're seeing that across the board. To be
mm-hmm.
honest with you, I was talking to the Edmonton Firefighters Union recently, and talking about their equipment. Recently, they're driving I heard they were driving a 1990s truck to mm-hmm. an incident because they had their regular truck was not it was
yeah.
in repair. Everything is aging out. Our trains
yeah.
are definitely aging out,
mm-hmm.
And we're not keeping up with the maintenance on those either, right? And so it's kind of a commitment to renewal, but also commitment to maintaining the equipment that we have. Our council actually was it last year or the year before, denied a maintenance package on our train doors as well. And I'm getting a little in the weeds here with you, but
that's okay.
Our newer trains, our SD160s, they were denied a door maintenance package. Seemed like a small line item, but it actually contributed to a lot more door problems, which affects our reliability, affects our on-time performance. Puts trains out of service, makes people lose connections. It kind of spirals there, right?
Right.
So that's part of the maintenance of our equipment.
Yeah.
We need that. So to keep it going, keep it moving, right? And so honestly, probably extend the life a little bit, but we also, again, that's part of the equation, also the renewal part.
And when we talk about transit as well, because you have this like firsthand experience, where's your assessment of like transit safety and like perceived safety?
I was at a police information session recently, and the stats are showing a decrease across the city of safety issues. The only part of that that's not decreasing is LRT, according to police. And so, and that honestly reflects my experience as a worker. And so we have our LRT control system right on the LRT control center where I work, right on the system. And so I've, ever since COVID, there has been safety concerns, and I've witnessed too much as a worker, as an operations guy. I'm not a social worker. I'm not police. I'm not security. I move trains along, but I'm also, myself and my operators and the inspectors that I work with, we're all seeing, I personally witnessed stabbings and shootings and bear spray incidents. I've seen numerous drug poisonings. Mm-hmm. I've seen people in crisis, and so it's left me a little bit traumatized. It's left my staff traumatized.
Makes it hard to encourage someone to take a bus or train.
It does. Well, and especially the trains, right? Yeah. And so I think my perception is that buses are getting, bus safety is getting better. The train system is still having those challenges still. And so I want trains. I love trains. I want trains everywhere. And I think it's an important, essential piece of the equation when we're talking about transit and moving people and making sure that people can get to A to B and honestly densifying the city and just an essential part of this transportation network. Right. Mm-hmm. But it's gotta be safe to be successful.
And where do you see like what's falling through the cracks?
There's lots of things there, right? So there's 5,000 people living on the streets right now, right?
Right.
And so, and that's people living vulnerably and in crisis. And so, those people are trying to find somewhere to go.
Yeah, shelters are packed.
They're packed, and there's not a lot of free spaces to just exist in, right? And so, especially in the winter months, they find themselves there, right? And so, and when you have that many people living in crisis, in a city such as ours, with not a lot of places to go, it creates the environment for people that are not there to do good things or looking for their own safety, right?
So, right.
And causing some challenges with criminality as well.
Right.
So I think you need to make sure that we're helping the people that need to be helped. And that's something I've been trying to get across with my work in street outreach. As I said, I didn't have a lot of tools when we were going through COVID as a worker on the system. Actually, I was out in the field during that time. And so, it's going with that again, too. But it's you got to humanize people. You got to find connection, and you got to help the people that need to be helped and want help. Right. And then I think once you do that, and that starts with housing, supportive housing, wraparound services, all the rest. Once you do that, I think you can find ways to. I think there's the enforcement angle for the people that are there
doing bad actors.
The things that are bad actors. Right. And so, and they're there. I mean, we can't deny it. And so, and again, I've lost staff because of it. I've had people go off on leave because of it. I've experienced my own, trauma as well around that too, and had to make sense of that. And so, I think we can be serious about both things. So I think there's some engineered solutions too, in regards to our, stations. And I think we need to be serious about that as well. So,
yeah. And going back to specifically your ward, do you start to see that kind of sprawl? Like, being so far south, like you look at like homelessness and that type of thing, is that something that's I don't want to make assumptions because you just don't know where people are at, but like, is that a big problem in your ward?
Oh, I think we're seeing it across the city.
Yeah.
Now,
so, yeah.
And, you know, as a train comes down to us in Heritage Valley, Twin Brooks, I'm hearing a lot of concerns. There was a big pushback against having a station in Twin Brooks. That's an essential amenity, right? Like that should make people's lives easier. But the fear is that it's going to bring in crime and disorder and people in crisis and all the rest.
Well, there
right?
was a and proposal so, for like a safe injection site, and people like they wanted to put it more in the south end, mm-hmm. or maybe it was in like St. Albert or something. Mm-hmm. But it was near like that St. Albert west side there.
Mm-hmm.
But people didn't want it because they said, well, now you're kind of like spreading everything out. So if we just keep the safe injection sites downtown, then the homeless people will stay downtown. But
it is a large burden on a small area. And, you know, Macaulay's been kind of been a space for that.
But it's interesting because you still want to be able to provide those services. And then what if someone's at risk in that area? They just have nothing.
No. Well, and that's it. I mean, that's the whole thing about the tents too, is that the tent cities that were going up for a long time there, is that people were finding community, right? And so, mm-hmm. I mean, you spread people out. I mean, I think it reduces the burden on a particular area, but also then you lose community, right? And,
mm-hmm.
and big part of why people were staying in tents in little tent cities is, and the trauma that they experienced when they were torn down, was that there was community there and that was lost. And mm-hmm. so I think going forward, accounting for that is important as well.
Mm-hmm.
But understanding that it's a huge burden for a little area. In one neighborhood as well.
Do you think you have a, when you look at like how you interact with people, do you think that is like advantage that you might have over other counselors because you have a very like down to earth kind of perspective in terms of working in the field that you worked in, where you're constantly like engaging with every walks of life?
I think that's been a major thing missing with our council. We have a lot of, you know what, we have a lot of really compassionate counselors,
yeah.
good policymakers, big ideas, totally cool. I'd be honored to work with any of them. And so, but I think what's been missing for me, again, has been the specifics, been the ground level voices, somebody honestly to bring some accountability on that front and, mm-hmm. And just make sure that those voices are heard as well. And so I'm not here to disparage anybody, but
no,
I
of course, yeah.
I do want to make sure that that's
no,
that's heard.
Yeah,
so, and like reasonable, right? And like, and again, that's why I built a big tent, is because again, it's you know, I'm not always going to agree with everybody that's in my ward, but I want to make sure that they're heard,
right?
And I want to make sure that, you know, where can we come together, and not and just and make sure that, you know, people feel included in the process. I don't think the city's done a great job on that, to be honest with you, that engagement process in the past, whether it's administration or council or whatever. It's sometimes we push through things. We've gotten to the table when decisions have already been made, and people have felt left out. I think that's a big issue. I said, if we want to make some major changes in the city, people have to feel like they've been heard, they've been engaged meaningfully, not just superficially, not just the checkbox come off.
Mm-hmm.
And so... yeah, so that's what I bring.
Yeah. And with the growing area of the South End, we discussed previously about like traffic and roads and that issue. And it kind of all ties into transit as well, because if, you know, we don't have the infrastructure to actually get these cars and vehicles and buses through, and there's huge amounts of like bottleneck, then we're going to have the same problem. Where has that been on like your list of priorities in terms of,
I think transportation infrastructure is a huge thing in Southwest Edmonton, especially south of the Henday. We got bottlenecks everywhere right now, and 41 Ave being like
Ellerslie,
the biggest thing for me right now, but Ellerslie too, right? Like Ellerslie, they're twinning right now. They're twinning from your old neighborhood, Graydon Hill, to pass the bridge that goes mm-hmm. towards Windermere. But they're not going all the way to Windermere. They're not going all the way to Rabbit Hill. And so no. we're just kind of moving that bottleneck further and further down.
Yeah.
41 Ave, they just renewed a section on 170th Street, did some upgrades. But the real problem is that there's so much traffic there that people are backed up. Like, it takes for people to get out of Chappelle and Paisley and Jagger Ridge and all these neighborhoods. I mean,
to make a right turn, it took 10 minutes.
Yeah. Half your commute is just getting out of your own neighborhood.
Yeah.
Which is ridiculous.
Yeah.
And so, I think we need to be, building out our communities, like, with density in mind. Density is totally cool as long as we have the infrastructure to back it up.
Mm-hmm.
And we just do not have the infrastructure to back it up right now. And so we need to kind of flip the script on how we're building these communities out. If we're building out a twinned 41 Ave before the community gets there, then that's maybe what we need to be thinking about. And as we go further south, because, I'm not a big guy for sprawl. I do think we should be building up and out, but I'm also realistic in knowing that the city has annexed all the land out to the airport.
Right.
There's a lot of infrastructure there that's right now that's not sufficient for now some of the traffic we're seeing. We're seeing, because of that 41 Ave being two lanes, we see people cutting through neighborhoods like Allard too fast. We're seeing people going through the country roads now. Those are getting all chewed up and torn up, and that's actually costing us a lot more money with maintenance operations going on too.
Nice.
I've been talking to some of the tree guys, the arborists that are having to deal with way more stock in trees out there further south, without the extra manpower as well. And so, it's kind of different from roads, I guess, hopefully you get what I'm kind of getting at there.
Yeah.
But, we're not building with kind of we're very reactionary, I guess.
And is there a threshold that is realistic to a resident of, like, what's the amount of pain that I should feel for the benefit that I'm going to get? So say we're twinning these roads. It's like, well, how long are we going to do this construction? Or how long is this going to take? And where are we going to see this benefit, right? That's like one thing, like when I think of construction, where it's like, that's also a pain in the butt,
Yep.
So is there amount of, initiative against incentivizing, like, where's the payoff for, like, the residents, right? And how long does that actually take to get that reward?
Yeah. Well, I mean, that 41 Ave should have been done prior.
Right.
To
when there was less traffic.
Yeah, absolutely. Right. So, in preparation for the amount of people that have moved out there. I mean, you can't tell the future, honestly, but we can't look ahead and know. I mean, reducing traffic is twinning roads is not the only way to do that. I mean,
right.
Having good transit is another way to reduce congestion as well. And having our LRT go all the way down to Desrochers as planned is part of that equation as well. Having multimodal pathways where people can choose to walk or bike or whatever else. Those are part of the equation as well, right? But we still have a lot of people driving right now.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think as we're building out communities, we start with that. And then we bring in some of these other things as things catch up as well. So, because again, we're just seeing, I'm seeing a lot of unsafe behavior now too.
Right.
As I walk these neighborhoods, I'm walking Allard and I'm walking Desrochers and I'm seeing people cut through. I mean, I even cut through neighborhoods because I'm just like...
Yeah, because it's just so much.
There's just so much traffic, so many pinch points, and honestly, again, people kind of are cutting corners to get where they're going. They're getting frustrated, so they're speeding a little more than they should be in neighborhoods. And I do worry about people's safety.
100%.
We had a little boy that was killed in Allard last year, in that neighborhood, and are just the infrastructure is not there.
So when we look at, say the time comes, you get elected, where do we look at, like, your priorities in terms of what you're trying to accomplish and what is, like, your timeline with that?
So our transportation network, in the Southwest is probably going to be priority number one at this point. So, and that includes the roads, that includes transit, getting proper transit through the area.
Right.
supporting the growth of our LRT, mm-hmm. Making sure that that stays on time as well, coming down to Heritage Valley, and then looking forward to the further growth down to Des Rochers as well. And so, you know, if I can accomplish that in 4 years, I mean, just getting that train, making sure that train state gets to Heritage Valley and is operational by, we're in 2025, it's mm-hmm. due in 2029. So that's the next election time. I would feel very, very good. I'd feel very good about having that 41 Ave twinned as well, making sure that that network is, that roadway is handling the capacity that's there right now. Mm-hmm. You know, the continued growth of our multimodal pathways through the area as well is going to be essential as well, to make sure that people have the options to get around.
That's like some of the small wins. Like, what are
those? Like, well, those are big wins, to be honest with you.
So when you look at like small wins, and when I say small wins, I mean like within the year of getting elected.
Within the year of getting elected.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, that would be like, for me, that would be what I consider like a small win. Mm-hmm. And then when you look at like overall growth, like that's probably going to take a full election cycle to actually get it done, get the everything approved, budgeting. But what do you think?
Well, I think that would be the, I mean, those are going to be the big focuses.
Yeah.
And that's going to take a lot of energy.
Yeah.
I mean, the little wins will be the engagement pieces.
Yeah.
Making sure people are heard, kind of the flip in the script on how that's done as well, empowering community leagues and these mm-hmm. and community organizations to hear, to feel like they're being heard and engaged in the process. They really felt left out mm-hmm. of that. And so,
what would you say your strategy is when you're looking at like building trust in a community? Do you have like specific routines or habits that you do to ensure that like you're gonna actually be able to fall back on your word? And you know, because sometimes it's all just like hot air, right? For some people, you're like, this dude is not even here.
Well, so I'll tell you, I've already started building out my calendar for after the election in the anticipation that we win this.
Right.
And so that calendar is starting to look like a lot of community league events, a lot of AGMs. I know that, was it Twin Brooks has a upcoming AGM. Paisley is looking at building or becoming a community league. They're not currently represented. Mm-hmm. And so they have a meeting in November that I've got on my calendar now too, and just making sure that I'm showing up to these things that are already community led, they're already happening, making sure that the representative, if I'm so lucky to be the elected official, is there. And so I've already kind of anticipating what that calendar looks like, in addition to the council
meetings
and schedules and all the other responsibilities that are mm-hmm. there. So
is there going to be any like changes that you would want to make to give more feedback to the community? Because you see some of the areas where you look at like excessive infill, a lot of the residents don't necessarily get a say, or they don't get what would be the process in actually doing that in terms of making sure that people have feedback before permits get approved, or you mm-hmm. know, these huge buildings, or someone's tearing down a 3-bedroom bungalow and putting in a 6-plex.
Well, I think there's deep concerns and I think there's some challenges there that are going to take a little while to solve in mm-hmm. terms of some of the things you just highlighted there. But I think in terms of, if we're going to talk about infill, which we can talk about infill mm-hmm. for sure, I don't hear a lot about it at the doors because most of my ward is fairly new and fairly dense. And
You're seeing this more in like Calder and some of these more established neighborhoods.
We're right on the border though too, right? And so my ward goes all the way up to 34 Ave. Greenfield is just on the north side of that. They're definitely having some... seeing some of that infill work going on, right? Mm-hmm. And honestly, again, infill is good. Again, we want to build up, not out. But I think we can have some regulations, some restrictions, some rules about, you know, what goes where, right? And so an 8-plex or a 16-plex may not go in a cul-de-sac, mm-hmm. but it definitely could be on 109th Street.
Yeah, we have to wait down,
right? Like a main artery, right? And something people talk to me about parking issues all the time with infill, right? And so it's like, I'm not sure we need a parking You know, minimum.
Yeah.
But if you don't, do you have good transit, right? And do you have access to other modes of transportation? Because not everybody drives. Not everybody drives. I mean, I grew up, you know, with probably on the lower income side of the equation, I guess, and or the spectrum. And I know we didn't always have a car. Mm-hmm. And so how do we get around, right? And so we walked or busted or we biked. So just making sure that that other piece of the equation is there. And I think that's what's been missing for me and my frustrations is like we're having recently we talked like within this last term, council has talked a lot about walkable cities, right? And now we're talking about infills and those both can be work hand in hand, mm-hmm. but they need to work hand in hand.
And like, if they don't, one bleeds into the rest. Now we have two problems.
Yeah, right. And so there's a project going on in Kahewan right now that is infill. That's taken up some of the playground space. It's an old school. Old school space land. It's not an old school. There wasn't a school there yet, but it was destined to that. That didn't happen. So now it's going to an infill project to house people. People need homes. Totally good, right? And stuff. But people are worried about parking, right? And so I'm not sure that transit component, you know, is kept up for it. Like we're kind of thinking about that. If we don't have parking, do we have good transit? I'm not sure the waste issue is solved yet either, and I'm hearing that from people in waste that's not.
Is this just the amount that the communities are just building so fast, or is it like where? Because you see all of these like infrastructural things like falling out, and it's like where are we just growing too fast? Like,
well, obviously we're going. I mean, we've got a lot of people coming in the country. We got a lot of people coming to Alberta. Got a lot of people moving to Edmonton, right? That's going to happen. That's for sure, right?
And the thing is, it's like you can't slow it down too much because if you slow it down too much, the prices just skyrocket. Like right now, the average price of an apartment is $1,600 a month.
Absolutely, right?
So like, how do we stabilize it, but also not like totally like freeze everything? Because then you're going to see this huge influx of residents, nowhere to live. And then it just becomes this like, you know, feeding frenzy on people just trying to get in, and then they jack up the rates and everything becomes a whole hullabaloo.
The concerns I'm hearing about infill are solvable issues.
Mm-hmm.
We just have to do them
and
actually commit to that. Right. Mm-hmm. So again, getting parking, waste. I think the utilities thing is probably overblown. My understanding of utilities now is that many of our neighborhoods are overbuilt for that anyways.
Right.
And, you know, with the advent of newer technologies, low flow toilets, stuff like that, I think we're probably okay. But I mean, people still have concerns about that stuff, right? So it's meaningfully engaging them in places like community leagues.
Mm-hmm. How do you have those conversations how are you able to tell someone like no or not yet? And how do you do that gracefully?
Well, I mean, you come where people are, right? Mm-hmm. You be where people are. So one of the things actually, going back to 2021, mm-hmm. I sat down with counselor at the time, Counselor Walters, who's now mayoral candidate, and he told me this is an issue here with the community. It's this Kahewan development, right? And so I knew it was coming, and I had heard a little bit about it at the Doors, some frustrations there. And then it was radio silence for 4 years. No, nothing happened. No shovels in the ground. No communications with people. I started door knocking there again. And I had started having people ask me about that project. And I didn't have any answers because there was a radio silence.
Mm-hmm.
My nephew goes to that school that's right beside it. My sister-in-law lives in the neighborhood. I'm in that neighborhood quite a bit. And she hadn't heard anything about it. And then like a couple months later into my door knocking, she sent me a message saying that they're doing an outreach event for this project at the school. And so I was like, great, now I'll tell people about it. People will know and people can come. And so we got there. I went there myself too. And it was a nice event for sure. But it was all, this is what's happening. So 4 years after that I initially heard about it, 4 years of radio silence and all of a sudden shovels on the ground. I don't think that's meaningful engagement. I don't think people feel part of the process. I want projects like this to be successful. Yeah. I want people to be housed. I want, but I also want people to be engaged. And I want people to get behind it. And even if they're not behind it, I want them to feel like at least they've been heard and they're part of the process meaningfully, not flippantly,
no.
not,
We're just going to do it anyway. We really don't care.
No, absolutely. Right. And so you're not going to get people behind these things. And just dismissing people as NIMBYs or whatever else is not fair to them either. And again, the issues that I hear with some of these projects, I mean, there's some things that I'm not sure are as legitimate in terms of like bringing in people that are less savory. I think people need houses and I think people are generally good.
Mm-hmm.
Right. But things, again, things like parking, things like roadway capacity, things like waste, things like even just removing green space.
Yeah.
Green space is in that area. There's a lot of green space. I've coached a lot of soccer on that field, but you know, Skyrattler being another one in that area in this ward that was about to lose some green space because of it. And that was their only green space that they had access to. Right. And so, 15 minute cities, it's a dirty word, walkable cities, is a, you know, we need schools and we need services. We also need playgrounds. We also need places for people to exist freely, get together, have picnics, play sports, stuff like that. Right. So that's also part of the equation. So I just like, again, just meaningfully engaging people, and understanding those concerns. So,
and I'm sure some part about it too, is just like grounding people in realism of like, this is what I actually can accomplish. And like what you're asking for is actually, this guy actually has something more to do with that, or the MLA or the province, or it's a federal thing, without dismissing them and like kind of taking them through the process of being like, yeah, what you're saying really isn't like my responsibility, without like diminishing your role or like losing credibility. Is that like a gauge that you have with like keeping people like realistic or being like fluid with people to make sure that they're like aware of what your tasks are?
Well, going back to what I said earlier, right? I mean, the beautiful thing of municipal politics at least up till now, has been that we are independent, whether we have party backing in behind the scenes. And I think we're still seeing that, or not. Is another thing, but we can work across levels of government and across party politics and party lines, right? And so this is why I've stayed independent.
Right.
And, you know, you don't see me taking pictures or even door knocking, honestly, with representatives from other levels of government. You know, I really value those relationships that I built with those other representatives, but I need people to know that they're able to talk to me.
Yeah.
Whether they support the NDP or the UCP or the Conservatives or the Liberals or anybody, right? Like, they need to be able to see themselves in the work that I'm doing. And that I'm prioritizing their voices, right? And so again, if it is not my responsibility, I need to be able to say, hey, here's your connection with your MLA. Let's go talk to them. Let's have a little communication there. And maybe I pass them along to them, and then I ask, you know, can you come back and let me know how that goes? What else do we need to do to get this thing for
right?
So, it's really important to me.
And how do you plan on like sustaining this over a 4-year period? Is there daily habits that you have in place for yourself to make sure that you're like putting your best foot forward and you're like, not gonna have any issues with burnout or, you know, kind of, because it is a lot, right? Like it is a lot.
Counselors, and I know a number of the counselors that are on council right now. It's an 80 to 100 hour job,
right?
Hour a week job, like for sure.
Yeah.
It's underappreciated how much our counselors do, because they're not only at meetings, they're not only at council, they're also at events. They're also representing the city and wherever they can. And then they go home and they answer emails for hours.
And 300 page briefs and
300 page. Yeah. If they're lucky.
At minimum.
Right. Yeah. Absolutely. And they're expected to be knowledgeable for the next day of what's coming up. So, you know, I've been doing it already. I work full time. So I'm lucky to have a 3-day work week. I work 12 hour days, with LRT. So I'm working, sometimes I'm working Sunday to Tuesday or something. In my off hours, I've already been serving the community. I've honestly already been doing a lot of this stuff. So in my off hours, I'm volunteering with community leagues, with soccer coaching, with street outreach,
Right.
Doing whatever I can to serve my community. So my week right now, and I'm also a dad and a husband too, right?
Yeah.
So my week right now is probably equivalent to what I would be expecting, yeah. right? And so I'm anticipating an equal amount of workload. That said, this does this work is definitely a strain, and especially this election. Campaigning is definitely a strain on the family, right? So, I mean, I'll tell anybody that's running for council or any level of government, prioritize your friends, prioritize your family when you can, even if it's just a couple hours a week, or like, you know, you got half an hour to sit and exist with your partner or your kids, watch a show. I know my kid, my oldest and I watch a lot of Walking Dead together, right? And some superhero shows. I watch a lot of anime with my youngest, and you know, just try to prioritize some of that alone time, you know, without phones as well, right? And so because it will. I mean, whether you're doing volunteering like I was doing and working, or doing this, it's you got to make sure that there's also time for yourself.
Yeah.
So I've not always done a great job of it, but I try, and that's something I've told my community league people too, is like, you do what you can, forgive yourself for what you can't.
Of course. And when you look at balancing your time, have there been a different allocation of ways that you're campaigning this time around as opposed to last time around? Was there things that you found out like this wasn't really as effective and I sunk a lot of time into it and it didn't really work? Whereas maybe this time around, like door walking got 10% more than it did last time around.
Yeah, I mean, I've definitely hit way more doors this time. I started way earlier too. So I was actually the very first candidate for council, mayor or trustee to put my paperwork in. So I put my paperwork in as soon as I could, November 1st. And so you'll see my disclosure been put in at that time, right? And then I actually became a candidate for ward at Pekokini Butte. It was the first one to do that too on January 2nd. So my name should be right at the top of the list, right? And so last election, I didn't put my name in until June.
Right.
And so the other candidates had a pretty good head start. But again, it's that, you know, getting out there, being at events, being visible. And that's what I prioritize. Again, it's a different election now. This is more of a normal election versus last election, where we couldn't make those COVID times. You couldn't create those face-to-face connections like you can now.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm very fortunate this time to be able to run again and
of course,
and meet people so face-to-face.
And before we get you out of here, I want to say I'm super grateful to have this conversation. I think the expertise that you have is very nuanced, and you can provide a lot more, you can provide a little niche area that can be, you know, very useful to the entirety of the city, based on your 18, 20 years experience, with transit and all the different roles that you had, as well as your resilience and your ability to stay grounded and, you know, establish that trust and have this existing connection with your community. It's very wholesome, and I think that's really huge that you're humanizing people and you're willing to be that conduit for people that are looking to have a little bit more trust in their city council and break down those walls a bit and give people more of a voice and be there for them, especially staying independent. So I just want to express my gratitude in coming on the show and, giving us the ability to interview you. Finishing off, I want to leave you the opportunity to pose the question or statement. If people don't listen to this hour and et cetera long conversation and all they really see is your name on a ballot, what would you kind of want to leave them off with?
Sorry, in terms of
so what would be like, just, give me your
my elevator pitch.
Yeah, your 60 to 90 second platform of your soundbite.
So in South Edmonton, there's three issues. I've been door knocking for just about a year now. I've heard from like I've hit 15,000 doors, talked to thousands of people, have been in dozens of events. What I'm hearing right now, safety is a big one, infrastructure is a big one, and affordability is a big one. We're all going to probably promise you similar things on that front. It's who's going to get them done, right? And so who has the knowledge of the inner workings of the city, who's built the relationships in the community, who's built the relationships in the city to be able to do this, right? And so I have built those relationships. I have done that work. I have served my community for a long time. I've worked in my field for a long time. I have the support of the workers that I work alongside that honestly report to me. And that's a big one for me too. Not only having the support of my community, but also the support of the people that my colleagues are, right? And so I think that means a lot, and it stands for something. And so I'm gonna lean on that a little bit here. You know, having the ATU, the Amalgamated Transit Union endorsement as a manager, is, you know, they went out on a limb and they went against the relationships with the other unions to endorse me. And because A, they believe in me, because we have that working relationship that is good, that's full of respect and honestly gets things done. We move trains. We do the job in a way that, you know, Edmontonians see and can appreciate, and the workers feel heard. I'm going to bring that to city council. So
where can people find you if they want to support you and follow everything you have going on?
So my website is johnmorgan.ca. You can check that out. There's places to volunteer. There's places to donate. There's places to get a sign. You can see some of my platform there. Again, affordability, infrastructure, safety, all key things here in this election, and just respecting that, those needs going forward. So that's what I'll be advocating for, yeah, on a big, big picture scale. Yeah. So.
And I think on your website, you also say you attend the farmer's market as well.
You know what? The farmer market is closed for the season now. So September 28 was the last day that we could do that. I was very lucky to be hosted there all season long. I built a pretty good relationship with the showrunner, who's actually a Canada Post worker as well. And honestly, unfortunately, kind of having some labor issues there right now.
Of course. So,
but I definitely stand with him and the work that he does as a frontline worker myself, right? And so, but yeah, so I'm not there, but you can definitely check out our social media too, and I appreciate that as well. So John Morgan Yegg across platforms.
Of course.
We're on the TikTok, on the Instagram, on the Facebook. I'm not so much on X, but I do, or I'm not calling it X, I'm calling it Twitter, and I'll always call it Twitter, but I'm on there as well. I don't really use it that much. I'm on YouTube. The butterfly one, YouTube. I'm on YouTube as well. Yeah, it's important to stay engaged with people in whatever forum they're on.
So. And we'll put everything in the description below. Yeah, we'll have everything, links, in the description below. Check it out. If you like the conversations that we're having like this today, be sure to like, subscribe, check out some of our videos with our other candidates. Election is coming up. 7th to 11th is advanced polling.
Yeah, get out there early. So advanced polling for us, it's October 7th to 11th, 12 to 8, and it's at Blue Quill Community League.
Okay.
So, but I think this is actually being broadcast after that, after the fact, isn't it?
Yeah, this will be coming out on... This will be coming out on the 14th.
On the 14th. So by then...
You should have already voted.
Hopefully you've already voted.
If not...
October 20th. And we actually have on our website, you're probably not going to be getting, due to the postal strike, you're not going to get the cards that you normally get.
Right.
So, but if you were wondering where to vote, it's on the city's website, Edmonton Elections, but you could also check out our website, johnmorgan.ca/vote, and that'll link you to where to go, where to find your polling station in your neck of the woods, whether you're in Ward Ipecoconepeutse or you're in Ward Annalnique, like you are here. I believe you are. That's your ward here. Yeah. You know,
get out there, vote.
Yeah, absolutely. It's important. Get your voice out. This is the most, it's not, I said I earlier called community leagues the most purest form of democracy. I mean, this is probably the most consequential form of democracy,
yeah,
right? This is your roads, this is your police, this is your fire, this is your transit.
Closest impact to the residents, for sure.
Absolutely. This is your daily life, is this level of government. So
yeah.
Yeah.
For sure. Get out there, vote, check out John Morgan on all the platforms below. And this has been another episode of Solo Spotlight. Don't forget to like, subscribe, and we will see you with another episode next week.
Thanks, Ryan.
Thank you.